Hi everyone and welcome to another episode of the Yacht Racing Podcast with me, your host, Justin Chisholm. On this episode, I get an update on what's been going on behind the scenes at the offices of the Ocean Race, the fully crewed around-the-world race that was of course formerly known as the Volvo Ocean Race. I have three guests on this episode, Ocean Race Executive Director Richard Mason, IMOCA 60 Class President Antoine Mermeau, and the race director at the Ocean Race, Phil Lawrence. Now, just before we get to the interview, one thing I didn't cover off when I was talking to Richard, Phil and Antoine was the change in role in relation to the race that the Volvo organisation has gone through recently. Something not everyone appreciates, I think, is that rather than just being a title sponsor of the race for the last 20 years, Volvo owned the race lock, stock and barrel and were instrumental in its development, including managing it through some stormy waters during the world economic downturn a couple of editions ago. Now, although the ownership of the race passed over to the management team from the last edition, Volvo is still very much involved as a major commercial partner of the race, the next edition of which is scheduled to start at the end of 2021 and will be raced in two fully crewed fleets, the existing eight VO65-1 designs and a new class of foiling IMOCA 60s. Okay, now I've cleared that up, let's get straight to the interview. So Richard, Antoine and Phil, thanks for joining me on the Yacht Racing Podcast today. Richard, perhaps you could tell us whereabouts in the world we're talking to you.
We're all in Alicante today. We've just been having a bit of an update after a short Christmas break. And we're obviously recalibrating ourselves after a very successful launch in Paris of the new association. And putting the plans together for the new year, so it's looking extremely busy.
I'm sure it is going to be a busy year. Just before we get too far into this, perhaps you could each just explain, kind of introduce your roles and explain really quickly what the responsibilities of that role are. Perhaps we could start with you, Antoine.
Yeah, hello. I'm Antoine Mermeau and I'm the president of the IMOCA Club. And my job actually is to run the whole system around the IMOCA boat. That means that the class is in charge of all the technical rules. It's also to work with the race organizer to deal with the calendar of the fleet, and that's why I'm here with the Ocean Race team. And I'm also working with the communication around the IMOCA 60 plus the administration on the class and the relationship with Federation or all the official insurance or things like that.
Okay, Richard, how about you?
Yeah, well, I think my current title is a director in the race, executive director. But the principal things we're really a case of what we're working on at the moment is putting the bones of the race together. So obviously now that we have the class rules and that together, we're working very, very hard on engaging the teams, both what we call present teams but future teams. So we're working a lot with Antoine as to getting into the French IMOCA world and looking at what the requirements are of teams in the future to be able to enter the race and supporting them both technically and commercially and communications-wise with Peter. Then we're also in the host city procurement phase at the moment, which is the beginnings of putting the race course together. So that's a big piece of work that gets done over the next 6 months. And then as we shortlist the cities, we start looking at building the race course, which obviously has to make sense from a sailing standpoint, a safety standpoint. So working very closely with Phil on that, and then we have to logistically test it, make sure it hits all the commercial markets. So it's sort of a multifaceted front, but a very important 6 months sort of coming. So the key functions at the moment are teams, host cities, and building the race course.
That's great. And Phil, as race director, this is your second race you're taking on now.
Yes, it is. And my responsibility is everything that goes on the water. So I'm putting together all the rules, documentation, so the teams know what's in front of them when they enter. And as Richard mentioned, you know, one of our first tasks is to put together a race course and check the viability of that course and the safety side of it, and getting, you know, in preparation for the race itself.
That's fantastic. Now, Antoine, just to go back to you, as kind of head of the IMOCA organisation, that's quite a different structure to what you're probably experiencing with the Ocean Race people. And we're going to call it the Ocean Race from now on. See how many times I make a mistake on that during this interview. Because the key thing about the IMOCA organisation is that it's an owner-driven organisation, isn't it? How does the decision-making work within that organisation?
Yes, that's true, that it's quite different than what we used to do with, I would say, the French offshore organiser, mostly because I would say that the Ocean Race is a huge organization. It's much bigger than what we used to do, because the Vendée Globe is a fantastic race, but it's a start from Les Sables d'Olonne and then it finishes at Les Sables d'Olonne. That means that the Ocean Race, it's maybe 7 or 8 times the Vendée Globe, even if it's shorter for the racer, but for the organizer, they have to organize 7 or 8 race in a few months, and that's why it's a bigger staff. And I have to say that I am quite impressed by the experience of all these guys and the way they are building this race year after year, and the heritage of the race is really huge. And then I learned a lot to understand and to know better this organization.
Antoine, what do you think it was about the Ocean Race, the appeal of the Ocean Race, that made it so appealing to the IMOCA class to kind of join forces on this thing and introduce the IMOCA class into what has been one of the most well-established races in it? What was in it for the class? Because it was voted in pretty unanimously, I think.
Yeah, you know, it's all about the offshore racing is something really strong in France, and single on this racing especially. And in the other way, you've got crew races that are existing for nearly 50 years with the Ocean Race, which is the biggest event. And I would say that the evolution of both worlds were parallel for many years. And I think that we were in France, we with our circuit, the solo circuit, I would say. We need at one point to be more international, and in the other way, for the Ocean Race, they had really good experiences, but at that time they need maybe to come back to boat with more development, and then it was also a good time because, you know, sailor like Charles Caudrelier, the winner of the last Volvo Ocean Race, is also a really good sailor in the solo circuit. And then there were a lot of doors that were open, and Mark Turner as well had a project a few months ago to merge between the world. And then yeah, it was a good time, the best moment to do that. Then we move away, and I think we are building something really strong and really great for the future.
Now, Richard, let's take a look at where we're up to now with the race. The race is scheduled to start in 2021. And actually, while I mention that, can we just talk about a little bit about rumours I've been hearing that the race may be delayed by a year? Is, you know, what's going on with all of that? Let's get that off the table, first of all.
I always get it nice and clear. There is no delay. And we're fully funded and ready to go. So the start gun will be going in the autumn of 2021. We're not too sure with these rumours. I actually heard it myself, and I was like, oh, blimey, it's the first I've heard of it. So that's not the case at all. And we're in full planning mode at the moment. We've engaged all of our host cities to a point where, you know, we're receiving bids from them around those, you know, around the dates, prospective dates for a race in 2021. We're also looking into an event in 2023 as an in-between event. to follow off the back of this one. So we're in full swing and planning for the 2021 event.
So you mentioned there a 2023 event. What more can you tell us what that might be?
Well, we're throwing around in the office here, in the very beginnings of it, talking with Antoine about a round Europe style event, a shorter event that it may happen in Europe. We're longer term, we may look at trying to other series in other areas. But, in principle, something that we used to see in the late 90s, sort of 97, I think it was, when there was a round Europe race. But we're looking at trying to establish something like that. And we will build that concept over the next sort of coming weeks and discuss it with the host cities to see what sort of market was for it. But that's our 50th anniversary then. So, we're looking to do something pretty special that year.
That sounds fantastic. And the question
is... In the IMOCA perspective, it's also important that the team that will invest in IMOCA to sell on crew and free crew sailing, they've got the ocean race plus and a program between the ocean race in 21 and the next one will be in 25th, I assume. Then we try to create and build together a circuit that allow the owner of the boat and the team to have a real program in between the two big events.
Yeah, that was actually one of the questions I was going to ask you further down my list. I guess what you're trying to achieve is a situation where there is a kind of a cycle of events between the Volvo Ocean, there's the first one, between the Ocean Race and the Vendée Globe, where teams can be more permanent rather than being created and then disbanded after events. Is that what you're trying to create?
Yeah, absolutely. But we're working very hard, conceptually, not just across events, but the way we're trying to put the rule together for the crew rule with the boats as well, that, the boats should be able to go across both disciplines and that we should be attracting the very best of the shorthanded sailing world into our race, we hope, long term, and also maybe attracting a few out of the crude sailing world into the shorter-handed sailing world. So we really want to see long term the sort of these boats and teams have been able to put together programs that go beyond just one race cycle. That's really important.
So especially the invest to build a boat is quite a big one. Then it's important that you can use at the top level in a 4 year circuit. Then it's much easier to finance the boat.
And what are we talking? Let's talk about those budgets because that's much discussed amongst the fans of both of these races. What realistically are we talking about in terms of budgets to campaign to win the Vendée Globe and to campaign to win the Ocean Race? What are the differences in those budgets?
It's a tricky one because actually the problem is that for a team based in Brittany, in France, you've got a level of life that gives a budget and it's based on a long-term project with people that are contract for many years. And then it gives a project that we know. In the other way, you've got a team that, like the team that you had at the last Volvo Ocean Race, they are operating on a few months project. And then it's people that are paid for only a few months and then they have to do something else. Then the economic model of this project are a little bit different. Then the total of the project is also different numbers. Then it's hard to answer in a few words about a project because it's such different model. And the same, a team like Dongfeng with the Chinese specificities has also a different level of project. Then it's really difficult to deal with to have a few words to give you.
I think to be honest with you, Justin, we as an organisation are trying to steer away from putting budgetary figures out there because that's really up to the teams to work out. And we've seen some numbers floating around. There will be extremes. There'll be the higher end and there'll be the lower end. I think the piece of work that we're focusing on at the moment is really, how do you take an existing team and that's running, annually. So they've got an annual budget that they run off to compete in events within the class, and how do we at what level can they come in and be very competitive at? So what do they need to add on? So we're doing internal planning work on that ourselves, but we're pretty careful with throwing numbers around.
Okay.
The other thing we're doing, Justin, is in the rules, we've got some cost restrictions in there in terms of the number of foils teams can use and test on their boats, the number of sails they can use for testing and sail development, and the numbers they can measure in for the race as well. So we're very conscious of the budget levels and trying to restrict excessive cost spend on the race.
I think that's something that's very much a focus for us as we're building the race course. We're building it to make sure that it's affordable by teams, and there's so many facets to that. And it could be even just the number of stopovers is that's a potential cost to teams. So, what's the right number of stopovers for us to have? Other relationships that we can build as an organisation with logistics partners and things, which help to reduce the overall cost for teams. Offering synergies through centralised spare pools and what elements of the boatyard will we bring into the future race that can offer savings to teams. So as an organizer, it's a big focus for us to make sure that the we can manage the costs and keep them down as much as we can, but not compromise the sport level. But there'll always be that, there'll always be a team that sort of manages to you can spend as much money as you want to in this sport, as we well know. It's he who's spends it the smartest that'll win this race.
And the sustainability side's important to us. So, the 65s did a great job in the last race, very close racing, very strong boats. We're going to use them again. We're going to have two classes in this next race. And then with the Imoca 60s, as Antoine has said, the idea is that these boats will do multiple races.
Understood. So let's dive into it a little bit. What can the questions I get asked all the time by fans of the ocean race are, where's it going to go? What's the course going to be? When are we going to see the final notice of race? And the big one is, which teams are going to be in it? Who's going to be the first to announce? So can you shine any light on any of that?
I can touch off on the course side of things. We're working very hard towards a goal of being able to announce the course in June, July this year. Obviously, there's a fair amount of negotiations that have to take place, but we want to get that done very early, because obviously it's important to the teams both commercially, planning-wise, but also there's boats that have to be designed in this edition of the race. So, we need to be able to give as much information as we can with that. We've got to... We have some rough ideas, but we can tell you that it will leave Cape of Good Hope to port and Cape of Good Horn to port. Cape Horn to port, we know that much. But where exactly we're going to end up in Asia and those sorts of things, we don't know that just yet. So it'd be a bit speculative to say that, but we're working on it.
But I think we can say it, plenty of Southern Ocean and plenty of downwind.
Yeah, but it's a big focus, is downwind, Southern Ocean, and trying to keep the course as much as it was in the last edition, because we saw a return back to the to proper Southern Ocean sailing and long legs, and that's fundamentally what we want to see carried over into the next edition.
And potential teams, can you talk about that at all?
Yeah, we can. I mean, that's another speculative subject, but I think it would be a very fair comment to say that, certainly as long as I've been in this organisation, which is 3 or 4 years, that there hasn't been the same level of interest as we have at the moment. We have on the Imoca front, we have some teams that are very well advanced. Announcing them, that's really up to the team, so that's a bit tricky. But I'd say right now, we're very pleased with the response we have in the Imoca 60 class, and in the 65 class, we've got a tremendous amount of interest. We've sold two boats are sold, so they're gone. So SCA and Mafre have gone to new owners. One boat is on charter until midway through this year. Another boat has an option for purchase on it, which could be executed at any point. So there's actually only four boats that are available at the moment, and we certainly have more people interested in the boats than we do boats available. So I'd say that's a long way off being entered in the race, but again, very healthy signs.
So from that point of view, Richard, you're thinking, you know, you're confident that there could be almost a full fleet of 65s racing, and I understand we're a long way away from the race being here.
Yeah, there's eight boats, so I think we'd be very happy to see six of them in the race.
Okay.
You know, the way the purchase agreements of the boats are structured, that, you know, when they're purchased, there's an, you know, they all have to be chartered in the race for a fixed fee. So you know, I think we'd be very, very happy to see six. And, you know, if it'd be eight, it'd be great. But there's a tremendous amount of interest. There's a, you know, at the moment, I've had two or three teams come in this morning, which, you know, a lot further advanced with the 65s than I thought they would.
And on the Imoca 60 side of things, what is your gut feel as to, I mean, what would be your what number would you guys be happy with to see on the start line?
I mean, that's a bit speculative, but I think Johan said in the Paris Boat Show, and I think the same again, probably anywhere from, you know, 8 to 12 boats. If we got to 12 boats, we'd be ecstatic.
Yeah.
You know, somewhere in that region, 8 to 12, I think would be we'd be very, very happy, and of course we'd have a pretty healthy yacht race on our hands then. We'd be looking for places to park boats in some of our host cities. So
yeah, a nice problem to have. Antoine, what's been the level of interest in an ocean race campaign from the Imoca community? What are you seeing over in France?
Well, it's quite high interest. As you said, there were a vote, and I think 85 or 90% of the player in the class vote to have the ocean race at the program of the class. That means that they want to do this race. And you know, the our boat and the history of our class is to go around the world, and to have the chance to have a race that goes around the world single-handed, Vendée Globe, is great, but to be able to do it by crew and with any stop is maybe better, because it's good to go around the world, but it's also good to visit the world. And then now I think that now we've got between 30 and 35 teams that are on good way to participate the next Vendée Globe. And I would say that third to half are working to find the budget to do the ocean race. Yeah, means maybe 10 to 15 teams, yeah, are working hard to finance the project.
Wow, that really does sound pretty positive. And you've got, I think, eight new boats being built for this Vendée Globe coming up. That's probably the strongest position the class has been in for quite a while, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe one or two more will have arrived. No, it's a quite positive time for the class, yeah. Mm.
So Richard and Antoine, a question for both of you. I think it's fair to say, and we've touched on it a bit in this conversation so far, the two cultures are quite different between Imoca and the ocean race, the let's call it the Alicante setup. I'm not saying that they're conflicting in any way, but they are quite different. How have you guys been approaching kind of melding those two things together? What's been the experience so far?
Well, we're the monster, so Antoine can start.
Yesterday evening, it looks good, huh? The true culture, no, I'm joking. But no, it's worked very well, actually. We are all sailor, we're all professional, and we are running any event everywhere in the world. And I would say that, yes, there are specificities to prepare a Vendée Globe, but yes, there are specificities around the ocean race. But I would say that it's the same kind of question, of answer, and then we are working like professional sailor that we are.
Yeah, well, I think, you know, science, I mean, Antoine is here with us, you know, he's here a week, a month, and probably you were here more in the closing stages of last year, and we're working extremely closely on both fronts, and we're trying to learn. You know, we're trying to rethink the way we think here. We have to evolve the race. We have big challenges to take the race into the future. There is a healthy market there for it, but we're looking to learn from the culture of the Omaka world, because it's, it's a bit more grounded. Might be you can do a lot more with less, but at the same time, we've got to educate the Omaka guys as to what we are and what we deliver as an organisation. Because I think to say the Omaka guys are used to entering a race, you pay the entry fee and that's it. You're on your own. What you do is up to you. Whereas our race, once you get involved with it, there's a lot more involved in getting the relationships around the world, the host cities, the media coverage, and everything else that it takes to put on a global event with stops. I think would be fair to say. Phil, what are you?
No, I think that's a good sum. Good sum.
Is that right? Yeah.
So far, it's looking good. So we sum ourselves up as confident but cautious and realistic.
And we all like drinking beer, so it's amazing. In France, the same in France, aren't they?
We cheers though.
I'm sure there's more connections than that. Phil, I had a question for you, which is on the move now to Imoca, and the fact that we're going to have two classes must be causing you a bit of a headache in terms of how these long ocean legs are going to go. It's a nerve-wracking time for everybody involved in the race when the boats are at sea. There's always a fear of hearing the phone ring in the middle of the night, bringing some sort of news, hopefully not bad. But we're going to potentially see the fleet more spread out. We're going to have two speeds of boats out there and possibly more breakages than we've seen in previous races. Any thoughts on all of that?
Well, we're doing some modelling at the moment on the various course options. And the speed differentials of the boats is not as much as you might expect. On even some of the longest downwind legs, the Omaka 60s might finish a weather system ahead. And on some of the modelling we've done on some of the legs, the 65s could finish ahead. Mm. So I don't anticipate a huge spread amongst the fleets. And you have both fleets are going to sail the same course. They're going to start within an hour or two of each other. So I think we'll actually probably have more coverage of the fleet because, in the Southern Ocean, the fleet has to look after itself. Our best rescue option is normally the rest of the fleet. Mm. We're looking at it. We're doing the modelling, but I think we'll be okay. In terms of breakages, I keep asked the question all the time by people, will the Omaka 60s get round? The latest boats, they put a good show up in the Route de Rome. It's very, very strong, rough weather going through the front in the early night. And the boats are being developed. I'm pretty confident they're going to be okay.
Yeah, I think the majority of the skippers of the existing fleet, like Mitch Dev and a few of those guys, Vince and Rio, you can break any boat in the world. Certainly I know that. But at the end of the day, it comes down to seamanship and knowing the limits of the boat. So, for sure we'll see, we'll definitely see more breakages, but because there's more boats. But we'll just have to wait and see how it all goes. I mean, it's the old adage, if you want to win the race, you've got to finish it. So we're hoping that the way we've weighted the rules a little bit with the penalty system for the boards and things is going to be encouraging the designers and the teams to be developing the boats, erring on the side of reliability as opposed to scrimping and scraping for a weight save in a certain area.
I think the other important thing to recognise is that actually the Volvo Ocean 65 is quite an extreme boat, and it's so strong and can sail in such strong wind conditions that the crews go looking for it. Yeah. Well, you can't do that in an Omaka 60, and the crews will have to manage the storm systems they encounter and the conditions they encounter, and will not be able to sail straight to the centre of the storm like they do in a Volvo 65. So for sure, they'll have to be more careful with the boats.
Yeah.
everyone. We'll return to the interview with Richard, Antoine and Phil very shortly, but I wanted to let anyone interested in advertising in this slot on future episodes of the Yacht Racing podcast know that they can easily get in touch with me by going to yachtracing.life/podcast and sending me a message. That's yachtracing.life/podcast. One last time, go to yachtracing.life/podcast, send me a message and I'll get straight back to you. Okay, let's get back to Richard, Antoine and Phil. Just on that, Imoca 60 and VO 65, two classes, and I think with the preliminary notice erased, in that it kind of stated that the Imoca 60s will be racing for the Volvo Ocean Race Trophy, and then there will be a separate youth trophy for the youth class, which is the 65s. Is that the way that it's going to be?
The 65s will have plenty of youth in the crew. That's one of the things we want to encourage. But it's a professional race for those guys. It's not just a youth.
No,
challenge.
It's more of a diversity. You know? There's still got to be three crew on board that have got experience. You know, and by experience, we want people who've sailed around the world before have got a hell of a lot of ocean miles to be. Make sure that the crews are safe and the racing level is high enough. I think the main aim of that is to really impart high level racing. Give people a foothold to begin their ocean racing careers that they can then, get the seamanship skills and everything. Don't forget that those boats did do 600, how much did they do the last, what did Nico knock off in the?
601.
601, that's quick
602,
enough.
602, I think you're fine, but yeah.
602, yeah. Well, that's, that puts grey hair in the right places.
is it fair to say that as a profile for one of those 65 teams that something like the way Turn the Tide was put together would be kind of the model for that? Or what's the profile you're looking for these teams?
It's quite varied, actually. We've got we have a lot of teams lined up for that class at the moment. I say a lot, there's probably 12 to 15 that are on the list at the moment, so serious contenders. And they're quite varied, in their aim and their level. Some of them are nationalistic, some of them are a little bit Turn the Tide orientated. Some of them are extensions of training programs and existing yacht clubs around the world. But I think they'll be pretty high level.
Okay, just moving down the list of questions I had for you. We talked about this a little bit earlier, the idea of teams competing in both of these events. The question is for all of you. Is it realistic to think we can build a boat that can compete and be competitive in both of these races? And I'm talking about, obviously, of the Imoca 60s here. Can you have one boat that could win the Vendée Globe and win the Ocean Race?
I think so, yes. Because I think that the Ocean Race is a race in which the performance of the boat is really important and the reliability as well. The Vendée Globe is a race in which the performance of the boat is maybe a little less important. The quality of the skipper and reliability are really good. And I think that if the best boat of the Ocean Race in 21-22 could be a perfect boat to win the Vendée Globe in 24.
Yeah.
Okay. And Richard, for you, you've done this race. You've sailed around the world, raced around the world several times in the Volvo Ocean Race, as it was back then, and the Whitbread. Looking at these Imoca boats now, one of the criticisms I hear from people and the kind of chatter on social media is it won't be the same as it used to be because the new Imoca boats, the crew is much more enclosed and protected. It just won't be the same. What are your thoughts on that?
They're dead right. It won't be the same. You just look at the evolution of where sailing's headed. The boats are damn near flying. I mean, when I started my career, we had spinnaker poles and jockey poles, and we had 12 people in a 60-foot boat with water ballast, and we went to sea for 38 days. In 38 days, we had the food on board. And we had no ice limits. We went down to 61, 62 south. And, you know, the whole way racing boats are, you know, put together and raced around the world is completely changed. I mean, we've got to evolve with it. And, the guys are inside the boat because they have to be. One of the discussions that we had, a very serious one, was the safety of trimarans, because, you know, there was a point before we got to the 60s here that we were talking about, you know, at what point is a monohull actually less safe than a multi-hull? Because, you know, the multi-hulls don't necessarily stop. The only problem with a multi-hull is when it really does stop, it stops for good. You can't, you know, you struggle to get it back in the race, but it's potentially safer. It's a safer platform than some of the monohulls that are, tearing around the world. And, you know, you do stops where you're going from. Some of the numbers we saw come from the route to Rome here that were coming off Alex's boat were pretty high, you know, 35s. I was asking Neil McDonald if they're true, but they seem to be. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, if you stop coming off that and you go down to 15 knots, you're close to, you know, 18 knot stop, you know, and drop in boat speed. So, you know, I think in the way the apparent wind angle sailing has come into it now, you're sailing downwind, you're effectively, you know, still sailing upwind. It would have been in the old days. I mean, you know, so it's, the whole sport has completely changed, but it'll be very exciting to watch. It'll be amazing. So no, it's not the same, but it's probably a good thing.
And how do you think
this race is about?
How do you think the teams are going to deal with the reduced crew? what will be the profile of those sailors? Do they all need to be helmsmen? Do they all need to be multi-talented? How's it going to work?
Multi-talented, brilliant helmsmen with an awful lot of endurance and psychological strength. Because these boats, to keep them up on the foils, you know, they're not an easy steer. I think Phil can attribute to that. You went out and your arms almost fell off after steering Hugo Boss for a couple of hours, didn't they?
Yeah, fantastic boat.
Yeah, no, so, but to keep them up there, to keep, you know, and the delta, the performance deltas are so high. If you're up on the foil and in the groove, you know, you could be 3, 4, 5 knots faster than if you're falling off the foil. So, you know, to keep the boat, you're going to be driving the boat for a couple of hours at a time. And it's going to take every skill you've got to be processing those numbers and keeping it going. So I think every single one's going to have to be a good driver and think on their feet. You know, everyone's going to have to be a very well-rounded ocean-going sailor.
Antoine, any thoughts from you?
For me, I think that that's the toughest offshore race, and then we are expecting the best sailor. And for me, the best sailor, the guys like Peter Berling or guys like that, they're able to win the America's Cup and the Olympics and to be one of the best offshore sailing. Then I think that in this race, you had for a long time the best sailor, and for sure they will be happy to play with a tough boat and fast boat, and boat not easy to sail and to sail fast.
So looking ahead now, We said at the beginning of the interview here that I think you told me that the race course you were hoping to announce by kind of July time this year. How does that affect the roadmap for a team now who's maybe got the money, clearly not ready to announce at this point, but what are they doing now? Are they having discussions with designers? Are they hiring sailors? How do you think it would work for somebody in that position now?
Well, the teams we know of, that's exactly what they're doing. They're in discussions with designers. They're talking to sail designers. You know, they're trying to narrow down the scope of the performance of the boat to know what to focus the design work on. They'll be trying to put together a testing phase or a race build-up period to understand, you know, what people they need when. I'm sure they've got navigators that are starting to look at, getting together weather packages and historical data for the designers.
There are a few teams that take time to sail with the IMOCA team this season as well.
Yeah, and I think most of them will be looking at pushing, you know, getting the campaigns fully up and running by mid Q2 this year. And most of them are looking at sort of a 12-month build phase. So they'd be wanting to been building, cutting molds in the later part of this year.
So it seems like a long way off, but if you're running a team, or like you guys, you're running the race, time's going to go pretty quickly.
Finger up there, but, he very kindly put on the whiteboard in my office that there's only 138 weeks until leg zero starts. So that's 137 now, because he did that last week.
Yeah.
There's not that far to go when you think about raising the money and putting infrastructure in place and everything else. Time disappears very quickly. Actually quite limited.
Well, listen, for the three of you, I really appreciate you taking the time to talk to me today. It's been a fascinating chat. I'm sure our listeners will enjoy it. The very best of luck to all of you, and we'll check in with you again soon, I hope. Well, that's it for this episode of the Yacht Racing Podcast. My thanks to Ocean Race Executive Director Richard Mason, Race Director Phil Lawrence, and IMOCA 60 Class President Antoine Mermeau for taking the time to speak to me from Alicante. Thanks also to all of you who listen to the podcast from around the world. I really hope you're enjoying what you hear. If you are, and you have a few minutes to give the podcast a star rating, maybe even a quick review on iTunes or Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to it, then I'll be eternally in your debt. Until the next episode of the Yacht Racing Podcast, I'll say goodbye and sail fast, everyone.